And good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio, and you're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. I'm your host, Susie Prez, this morning, and we have our special edition Garden Talk right here this morning, where gardeners will be talking about all things vegetables, berries, plants, bugs, weeds, soil, and food preparation, and how nature can nurture and enhance our lives. So I want to welcome my gardening friends, Emily Levine from Red Wheelbarrow Farm. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
And Pat Wentworth from Pat Wentworth
Space.
House. And also representing, coordinating the community gardens here in Sandpoint. And Alyssa Wades.
Wads.
Yep.
Sorry about that. And you are the master gardener helping out the Farm and Stidwell School Gardens.
Yes.
And you're part of the Bonner County Gardeners Association.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
Welcome. And we have a lot to talk about. We'll hear some music related to gardening. And we hope to inspire gardeners and future gardeners by bringing this information and ideas to the KRFY Garden Talk show. But before we get to that, let's hear about the weather from the National Weather Service. Currently, they're telling us it's 52 degrees. We have a 30% chance of showers, mainly between 9 and noon this morning. Mostly cloudy with highs near 67. Northwest winds 13 to 20 miles per hour with gusts as high as 28 miles per hour. New precipitation amounts less than a tenth of an inch possible. However, tonight, 20% chance of rain, lows around 44. And tomorrow, 90% chance of rain, and all of us gardeners are going, yay!
Yeah.
And high 58, Wednesday night, low 40, with 40% chance of showers. So that's from the National Weather Service. So let's get to it. What do you say? What's coming up in your gardens?
Everything. Everything, and still things to be planted. I'm just going to put my tomato starts in, my pepper starts, and my eggplant starts in this week, today actually. And everything else is pretty much in. Everything's going great. Peas are doing wonderfully. And it's just, it's kind of a fun, busy time of year. Along with the community garden, which I must mention. So there's a lot to be done, always gardening. As Emily well knows, does it for a living. It takes a lot of time and energy, and it has to have love because it's not possible without doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that's what it's all about. There's a certain aspect of just kind of, I've noticed lately going into the garden and seeing what needs to happen next, and it kind of dictates the flow of the show, I call it, flow of the day as to what we're doing in our gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And how about your garden, Emily?
Well, this is the time of year I always get really jealous when Pat says, my garden's pretty much planted. My garden has a long way to go, but we do have a lot going on. Let's see. My greenhouse, I'm eating peas now out of my greenhouse. We already went through a whole batch of radishes, head lettuce, and salad, and some really beautiful cilantro have all produced in the greenhouse now. They're kind of coming to a close. The peas are just coming on. And planting some of my summer crops still in my greenhouse, cucumbers and beans and tomatoes and things like that.
So you're already planting green beans?
In my greenhouse.
And then you do a transplanting thing?
No, this is my high tunnel greenhouse, so it's in the ground.
It's
in
permanently there.
Right. So well, nothing's permanent, but
right. They're not going to move. They're going to live
there.
They're going
to stay there. Yeah, these are pole beans, so I'm going to hang them from the bracing of the greenhouse and pick them without bending over.
Mm. Oh. Big. Extending the season a little bit with this cover house.
Exactly, thing. Yeah. So my summer crops in my greenhouse are also covered with row cover. So they're double covered just for a little extra warmth. Because we still are having, you know, we had a frost just the other day at our house. So our greenhouse keeps things nice and warm. My tomatoes are double covered and, or, you know, they're covered by the greenhouse once, and then they're covered with row cover inside there. But mm-hmm. outside, we've planted carrots, beets, parsley, peas, kale. My kale is ready to pick. It's huge and beautiful. Broccoli, not ready to pick, but anyway, things are going well. And getting ready to plant some other, you know, kind of getting into the summer stuff, getting beds ready.
So that's a commercial endeavor. Lots going on. You also have your own group to feed. And that still could equate to a home gardener. Everything that you're doing, you could just do on a smaller scale.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think my garden, my farm, whatever, is like this, is kind of a, more of a giant garden than a farm. The way that we manage it right now is more like a garden than a farm. We don't use a tractor in that space. And we probably are going to be upgrading to using a tractor in our new space when we transition. But it's just a big, really big garden. So, you know, you could do it for sure, everything that we do on a smaller scale. And I think a lot of people's, like, grandmas used to grow a garden almost the size of ours for their families. You know, if you were really putting up all the food you need and feeding your kids and your grandkids. And I mean, it's a big, it's a very large grandma garden.
That's a nice way to look at it. And are you planning to have interns or woofers there this year?
We are. Yep. We have a couple of interns lined up who are students at my alma mater who are still finishing up the school year, and they'll be coming in June, and one will be staying through the fall.
It's really a good opportunity to find out about the kind of the new farming movement mm-hmm. in our country of, I don't know, young people, I'll just say that, taking up the agriculture in a new way.
Yeah. And I should say, I guess I don't have anybody in for the next month. So if anybody out there is interested, I can't really just do like one day because it takes some time to get used to the tasks and things. But if anybody's interested in coming out like one day a week for the next couple weeks or something like that in exchange for some garden plants and veggies or something like that, you can find me at the farmer's market.
Yep. Red Wheelbarrow Farm. Mm-hmm. And Alyssa, you're working with the Farm and Stidwell students.
Yeah, the school garden project.
So why don't you tell us where that's at and what the students are learning? I think mm-hmm. Garden education is very important. And so what's going on there?
Well, tomorrow the Elks Club is building the beds. We're going to have five raised beds at Farm and Stidwell. Kind of as you come in, you'll see them. And then Friday we're going to plant most of it. We're going to do a fall garden because the school, of course, is closed during the summer. So we're doing, I think, a couple beds of potatoes. We're going to do a pumpkin patch. We're going to plant a lot of stuff in there. Yeah, it's fun.
So what are the children really learning? It's not just here, mm-hmm. put the seed in the ground. It's a multi-level dimensional process of the whole growing process and their involvement in it.
Yeah, it's a little early to say because we don't have the beds in place, but we did a field trip to the community garden last Friday, and we planted a food bank plot together. And
Yay!
And I thought I would let them do the weeding and let them look at what's in the plot first, because I did weed it last fall, but you know, a lot of weeds came up and a lot of self-sown plants came up as well, so we got them to identify the kale plants and the flower plants and lettuce. A bunch of stuff had come up, and we transplanted those out, and then we weeded the whole thing. So I think that's important, what to identify to keep and what can be weeded out. Then we amended the soil. So we added some trace minerals, some manure, some new topsoil that Pat had gotten for the garden, and then we planted potatoes and carrots. So it was fun. I think they learned a lot.
Yeah, seeing what came up over the winter mm-hmm. really gives them a picture that under the ground there's things going on.
Yeah,
and
that's
what
true.
Is that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And what age group are these students? What class?
It's the grade 1 through 6 experiential learning class with Nicole Dash, the teacher over there at Farm and Stidwell.
And about how many students does she have in that mixed grade?
19.
Okay.
Yep.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you for helping the students find out more about where their food comes from and how to grow it.
Yeah, it's lots of fun.
And Pat.
The community garden. Well, it's we still have plots available, so come on over. I think there are about 10 or 11 plots remaining. And you may notice that there are some weeds and things in some of these plots, and they look like there's no nutrients or anything like that. Well, the weeds grow through the winter. They were cleaned up before they were went to bed last fall. And so it's time, if you want to plant, come on over. I mean, you can plant any time, but come on over, take a look at the beds. And there's manure there. There's composted manure at the garden, and there's also topsoil at the garden. So you can just add to that, add to the beds that if you rent a bed, just add to it and start planting. We can pick up pretty quickly towards the middle to the end of May, and the plots get sold out. So if you're interested, just give me a call at 265-9828 or go to the garden site. Just Google Sandpoint Community Garden, and you'll get to the website. And download the forms, send in the money, and come on over. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people are enjoying it. It's been a great year. We had a great kickoff of the season. And we still have some beds left, so make sure you get your information in and we'll get you started.
Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of resources there. I mean, you had a kickoff day.
Yes, we did. And it was the best one we've had since the beginning. And we had a magnificent turnout.
It was like 25 people.
Yeah, the energy, everything was just, we have some new blood, and we have our seasoned gardeners, as Alyssa is, and several others. We also have Luella and
Robert
are kind of monitoring the garden this year, so that if you have questions or they see something that you may not know about, they'll contact you, let you know that maybe there's weeds in there that you need to get out of there because they're invasive. And we're also getting a compost bin, a three-stage compost bin made by a volunteer, Rod, and he's got another gal the two of them are going to build it. We'll supply the materials, but it's something where the garden waste can go, and, you know, even gardeners that or people at home that have vegetable waste and that kind of thing, you know, feel free to bring it over to the garden and put it in the compost bin. We'll have instructions on how to use it and all that kind of stuff. So it's a new year. It was really exciting.
Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful. What a wonderful thing that we have, this community garden. Mm-hmm. I've often wondered, it's a respectful place, too. It's right next to this festival at Sandpoint.
Right.
It has a nice feel to it, and right next to the baseball field for the little kids. And so wonderful. Good work, you guys. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned compost. I know we've talked about it before, but it is kind of the whole idea of soil and how to feed the soil. Because if you think about a growing plant, and this is probably something the children learn, they learn by so much by observation, but where... So you put this little seed in the ground, and all of a sudden this beautiful plant comes and then starts producing, I think, of a tomato plant, and all these beautiful red or golden tomatoes. But what feeds the tomato plant? And it's got to be the soil, the health of the soil, and compost plays a big part of it. Is that true on your farm, Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. When I think about what a plant eats, I think about a forest. You know, in a forest, there's nobody coming around feeding the plants. So so what they're eating is all of the old material from plants and animals and bugs that have died or that have eaten and pooped and things that are rotting, and it's a whole cycle. So plants eat everything that is broken down. So compost is just human beings taking that decomposition into our own hands and concentrating it in a space. So we're basically making a forest floor in a pile and turning it into really concentrated food and organic matter and then redistributing it out into our gardens.
Mm-hmm. Are there things that you can put in a compost pile to accentuate or activate it a little faster, because I know it can take a while?
Yeah, there are a lot of products you can buy. There's a lot of plants or things that act as compost stimulators. I know people have used Comfrey is a really like powerful plant. You can either put its leaves straight into the garden or make a tea out of it and spray it on. Use it. You want to keep your compost moist but not wet, because that's how the forest floor is, if you imagine, in anything that's decomposing. There's mycorrhizal fungi, like all sorts of bacteria and fungus that work to activate, you know, what's happening in compost is worms and bacteria and fungus are eating the plants and turning it back into dirt. So it's really important to have the proper pH, because a lot of those microorganisms only function at the right pH, which often means that you have to add just a little bit of lime, because most of our manure and, you know, if you're adding anything that has pine or fir needles or anything like that is going to be a little bit acidic. So lime is going to balance that out a little bit. And then heat. So you need to make your compost pile the right size. There's a lot of really good resources. I am not the best one.
You sound like you know what you're doing.
I've made a few good compost piles, but there's always room for improvement. With compost.
Diane Green uses a big old thermometer. She sticks in the pile and it has to get to a certain temperature. Do you know about that?
Yeah, that's she didn't have a compost pile when I was there because she just fed everything to her chickens. But yeah, there are compost thermometers that, yeah, have like a 5 foot long probe. Because really, especially if you have weeds in there, or pest eggs or anything like that, like it needs to get hot enough to kill all of those things. So it's really important to get it up to temperature if you're going to be spreading it back on your garden.
Okay.
I don't know where you can get those locally. Maybe the
Peaceful
Co-op.
Valley or something.
Yeah, I'm sure you can order them.
Yeah,
through a catalog or online. I'm not sure if anyone locally. Maybe All Seasons might have a compost thermometer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I think about a compost pile, I think, what do you feed a human being to have optimal flora in their tummies? Our digestive systems. You have to have a certain amount of carbohydrates, protein. Mm-hmm. Fiber. So I think what you just described reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about balance.
And carbohydrates would be like dry grass, like straw.
Yep.
Dry leaves. But protein might be things like, well, the manure.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what about fresh green grass? Where does that live in a compost pile?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all part of it.
Yeah, it's a, you want to have a mix of dried material, brown material, green material. So that could be grass that you mowed, or it could be if you're pulling out, you know, a crop of something that's done producing, you want to be layering those things, and then some sort of dirt or manure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show, and we're here in the studio with Emily, Alyssa, and Pat, and Susie. We're talking the Garden Talk Show. And having a great discussion. We have a whole lot more to cover, but what do you think about a song right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I'd like to swing over to a little bit more about some of the plants that are in our greenhouses or in our on our windowsill, like maybe tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And this is Steve Goodman. I'm sorry, it's Guy Clark, Homegrown Tomatoes. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes.
And that was Homegrown Tomatoes by Guy Clark. Great little song for this morning. We're here at 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio. We're having the KRFY Morning Show with Garden Talk with Pat, Alyssa, Emily, and Susie. So let's get back to the thought about gardening. We have, we wanted to talk a little bit more about weeds.
Mm-hmm.
So go for it. It's something in every garden. There's no way to get totally around it, but there are ways to live with it in a way that you can almost appreciate them.
That is exactly the lead-in that I wanted, Susie, because one thing that I have found, that we have found in our garden, that has been really freeing. Of course, weeds are always there and they can be really, really frustrating. But we have started to weed before you can even see the weeds. Literally, before you can see them, if possible. Or when they are as small as possible. When it's when they're at that size where they're teeny, teeny, tiny, and you look at it and say, oh, yeah, I don't really need to weed that. That's exactly when weeding is, like, joyful. Because you just, we actually prefer to think about it as cultivating our garden versus weeding our garden.
Yeah.
When the weeds are so small, you can just knock them down. And it's really important to do it on a sunny day, because if it's about to rain, then a lot of times those weeds will just replant themselves. Mm-hmm. The roots will get wet, and they'll just find the soil again. But if it's a sunny day, which we've had plenty of, you can just knock them over, really.
And you leave them. You don't pull them out, right?
When they're that small, there's no way to pull them out. And,
that's true.
Right. Except for quackgrass, we always pull out.
Don't say that,
you know.
Please.
Sorry. We pull them all out. Oh, no, we leave them all. That's what I meant. Because that other thing doesn't even exist.
No. Come to my house.
So even on a garden our size, we use a lot of long-handled tools and try to just get the weeds as early as we can so that it isn't a chore.
Well, and a follow-up on that is mulching helps that, too.
Absolutely.
The mulch can be straw, and there is, and I don't have the woman's name that told me about this. They're donating mulch, but it's through, you can volunteer a donation to them. It's going to be out by Lignetics, and I didn't get an email follow-up, so if you're listening, I need the information again. They're going to donate mulch, and for all you community gardeners, you can go out there and give them a couple bucks and get a whole bunch and use it, because, you know, as we think California has a water problem, we're already looking at a problem. We are dry, and this whole Pacific area, we're not immune to what's going on, and we may have a very, very dry summer. So mulch becomes imperative. It cuts down on the watering, it probably by, what, three times?
Yeah.
You know, you water three times less than you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not a big fan of wanting to go out and water your garden, this is a perfect way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's healthier, it keeps the roots cooler, it keeps the moisture in, and becomes really, it's the water saving is the biggest. That's the thing that we really have to pay attention to. If we start doing it now, it doesn't matter whether it rains or not. You should always use mulch, because it just is healthier for the garden, it's healthier for the plants, and it conserves water.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yes, it does kill the weeds off, so you're winning. It's a win-win-win.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about mulch, I bought a bale of straw last year, and it was full of seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I did wait till almost winter before I put it down on the ground, but I did notice new weeds in my garden.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They came up real easy in the spring. I think I got a handle on it, but that's something to consider, what kind of mulch you use.
Well, straw you can get, well, I don't know, they say seedless straw. I don't know where it's sold, because I supposedly got seedless straw and ended up with a whole bunch of weeds.
Me too.
So it's that kind of thing. So seedless straw or sour straw would probably be, I don't know if that does kill the weeds, but I'm thinking it's fermenting, so maybe it does.
Mm-hmm. So when you say sour, basically you're waiting to use it, maybe curing it.
Correct.
In some way to kill those weeds. I wonder if you could put black plastic over a bale of straw and leave it for a couple years. Is that what you're talking about?
Why not? I mean, you know, that's what they do to kill weeds in lawns and doing that kind of, you know, the permaculture thing.
I'm not sure if that would kill the weed seeds, though.
No,
a lot of times
I don't
they'll
know.
Just, seeds are really hardy. They'll stay dormant until they get moisture and sun, and then they'll come out. But you could let it get wet and let the seeds sprout, and then, you know,
just
knock
them
all down, and then use the straw, because then the seeds are up.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, having weed seeds, the alternative is that somebody sprayed a bunch of herbicide on it, so that could be even worse for your garden.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you might end up with that. You can ask the farmer, you know, that's the best you can do. And if you buy straw directly from somebody, you know, how weedy is it? But yeah, that's part of the cycle.
And so better deal with the weeds than chemicals.
I think.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, and there are many kinds of mulches. I mean, they have plastic mulches that mm-hmm. Diane Greene uses. They're red and silver, and it produces the colors produce and have
increased
the increase the yields and the hardiness
like
of plants.
Like 30% increase,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. And you can buy that. And, the other kind of mulches I'm trying to think of. Oh, newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Leaves.
Yeah, leaves are great. Absolutely great. Yeah. Yep, absolutely great. It's using the stuff that we have available. So, mm-hmm. But it really is a tremendously important thing to do. It concerns me from the standpoint at my own home. I will be mulching all of my plants, all of my beds where I can, because I don't broadcast seeds, so I plant them in rows. But we're looking at conserving this precious water that we still have, mm-hmm. and watching California having huge problems.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a big issue.
Oh, yeah.
I know that at the co-op, they're selling rain barrels.
Ah, good.
And they're all set up to just put the downspout from your eaves, your mm-hmm. gutters. Mm-hmm. And it has a little spigot on the bottom. So if you put the rain barrel up on even a couple of bricks, make a little brick patio for it, then you could use that too.
You bet. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, mm-hmm. We're not immune.
No, and it's also just using everything, all your resources right from your yard. I mean, if you live in town and you were to water your garden every day, it gets very expensive.
Yes.
Also.
Yes.
And it probably taxes our system, our water system for the community.
Yep.
In some
better
way.
Than watering a lawn, though.
Well, yeah, I gave up on that. So we mentioned organic, and let's just for a second, anyone have anything to say about, because, you know, it's not a given that everyone is listening, it understands why the four of us are organic gardeners. But for me, it's part of why I garden. It's to be involved in a natural cycle of life. And to not bring any more chemicals into my life and my neighbors' lives than we've already got. So how do you all feel about that?
Well, the organic movement has come a long way, and it will come even further where organic will be the norm, as opposed to, you know, buying vegetables with pesticides on it will probably be more expensive if people are into buying vegetables with pesticides. But it's becoming more of the norm. And organic, you know, certified and all this other kind of stuff is, I don't know what certified means. All I know is that it's expensive to do. It's very challenging. But just paying attention to what you're doing on your own vegetables. It's using natural products. There are so many out there. I mean, you know, between worm castings and all of these other things that are available at not too big of an expense, your own food from your table scraps that go into a compost bin, we're all capable of producing great organic fertilizers and nutrients. And paying attention, and it does seem like it's a chore. Well, somewhat, it is somewhat of a chore. You have to change your thinking. And once you start doing that, it really, you just love it, because then you look at your garden and you've added to it through your own, you know, you're recycling your own vegetables. And mm-hmm. so it's, it's really important. Pesticides are on their way out. We hope to see those gone in a very short period of time. And all these other sprays that we can make on our own with cayenne pepper and all this kind of stuff to get rid of aphids and all that kind of thing, it's all there. You know, use your computer. Look it up. That's how I've learned to garden, you know, is I've looked up everything when I had a question. I had to find out somehow.
Mm-hmm. Another resource for finding out if you're a new gardener is to go to the farmer's market. And Emily, why don't you give us a little rundown on what's just started a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
And what's happening there?
Well, it's been an amazing farmers market start. We had our first market on Saturday, the 2nd of May, and have had one every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and every Wednesday, including tomorrow from 3 to 5:30. There will be some farmers out there tomorrow likely in the rain. So, come on out and patronize our local farmers. We've had really great markets. We've had lots of food. There's lots of spring greens, some overwintered potatoes and carrots and green onions and herbs and radishes and lettuce and lots of stuff to eat. But a lot of what you see at the market right now is also plant starts. There's a lot of people locally growing some homegrown, wonderful, different varieties of vegetable starts, flower starts, everything under the sun, lots of tomatoes, peppers, all those things. So if you haven't gotten those already yet, come on down to the market in the next couple weeks. There's plenty of time still to plant your garden, whether you've started or not. I think everybody could plant a garden on June 15th and have a spectacular yield. So it's not too late. So come down to the market, and we have live music at every market. We have this coming week. Tomorrow is going to be Doug Bond, who always has a great set for the farmers market. And Saturday the 16th is Rough Shod, and that'll be fun too. That's a nice, nice folky duet usually.
Fiddlin' Red and Desiree.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah, it's always good. I was just thinking about varieties of tomatoes, mm-hmm. and there has to be, 200 more plus?
Oh, more. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh. And that's kind of an exciting thing. Alyssa, what are some of your favorite tomatoes? What are you going to plant this year? Have you thought that out yet?
Oh, yeah. I've got them started. They're outgrowing their grow lights right now.
Yeah.
The ones that look the healthiest are they're called Italian. They're like a big slicing, a canning tomato, dual purpose. I'm doing the brandy wines because I love those, even though they look hideous. I'm doing Siberians, blueberry cherries, sun gold cherries. I'm doing a bunch of stuff. Yeah. So, and I won't get them in the ground because I'm not putting them under hoops this year. So they'll probably go in Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For safety's sake, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
And planting, they always catch up.
Yeah,
they do,
yeah, exactly.
If you're planting right outside and you don't have cover or some sort of warming place, or if you don't live in Hope or something,
right.
June 1st is a really good time to plant your cold-sensitive crops. So tomatoes, peppers, eggplant.
Beans, all of
beans.
That.
Beans, yeah. Cucumbers, mm-hmm. zucchini.
Flush. Yeah.
One of the things that I always think of, I have a garden in town on Main Street. It's in the front yard. And a few years ago, someone walked by and saw that I had this garden. And they saw me in the grocery store a while later and said, you inspired me to have a garden. I don't have any land, but I bought all these containers. So I just want to really emphasize that we can have gardens no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
We
right.
can be a little pot of parsley, mm-hmm. like my mom has in her apartment, or it can be bigger containers. And I was thinking about potatoes. Mm-hmm, you can grow mm-hmm. those in a bucket,
yeah, mm-hmm.
with straw, with very little else.
Or in a straw bale. That's what I'm doing this
yeah,
year.
Right.
Well, tell us about the straw bale, because I've been mm-hmm. hearing about that. My friend mm-hmm. in Wisconsin's using that method.
Yeah.
So what is that?
Well, if you do it right, at the end of the season, you just cut the twine on the straw bale, and it opens up, and there's these beautiful, pristine potatoes inside. No dirt. And the straw itself, what I'm doing right now is I'm conditioning the bales. So you buy the bales, tip them on their side so they're vertical. You water them and you add organic fertilizer. Water them every day for 2 weeks, organic fertilizer every other day. And what you'll see at the end of the 2 weeks is if you put your hand in the bale, it should start to warm up. It'll be a few degrees warmer than the air temperature. And then you put a little potting soil on top and plant your starts or your seeds in them. And they, as the season progresses, the bale will break down into composted soil. And you can use the bale sometimes two seasons. If you don't cut the twine, they have to have the twine to keep them intact. And the second season are perfect for potatoes because they're just broken down enough. You can punch a hole in them, like a vertical hole in them, and you put your potato start inside, and then they grow like crazy. So that's
what
I'm
doing. Are you
doing
potatoes, or are you doing other vegetables in it?
I'm doing potatoes and I'm doing cabbage. I'm a little challenged with my backyard because it's a shade garden. Mm-hmm. So I have spots. I've got six bales in strategic spots that get probably about 6 hours of sun a day. Mm-hmm. So I never have a great experience, but I'm thinking with the warmer roots, because it's a composting process, mm-hmm. that my plants will be happier. And anyway, it's That's a challenge. Great. We'll see.
So did you say that you first take the bale and turn it on its side vertical?
Yeah, you plant vertically.
Do you cut the strings?
No, no, you keep it intact. Okay, that's like your container. It's like a container garden.
Okay.
And the roots can go down and embed also in the soil beneath. So I'm actually, I'm kind of a haphazard composter. And I've been doing compost piles around my garden space in the backyard. So I'm putting it on top of old compost piles so it can grow down through the bale into some really rich soil. So hopefully it'll be happy with even with the lack of sun. But we'll see.
So I was wondering what kind of organic fertilizer are you putting on your straw bales?
I think it's a fish emulsion, I think. You do 3 cups of organic fertilizer per bale, and I just make it into, I do a scoop of the powdered fish emulsion or fish fertilizer, add water, and then put that in the bale, and then use my hose and kind of force it down into the bale.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where do
you... 3 cups every other day?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Conditioning the bales.
Yeah, you have to condition. If you just plant it in the bale, it's not going to break down and you won't have good success. So the key is 2 weeks of conditioning prior to planting.
I love the creative process of gardening. Yeah. Someone came up with this and now everyone's doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
We have, what else do we want to talk about? We've talked about the weeds, straw bale gardening, and other resources that people can go to get encouraged if they're new gardeners, especially. Usually by the time at our stage, we've established who we go to to ask questions.
I mean, I think going to see other people's gardens is the most inspiring thing. Go down to the community garden and look and see the healthy plants and how much space they gave them and how they're holding up their tomatoes and... what's growing when? What's there right now? And how do they look? And why are their peas so tall and mine are so short or whatever? Just comparing. If you have a neighbor who you know has a cool garden, knock on their door and ask if you can look around. Everyone loves to show off their garden, unless it's really weedy. So maybe give them some heads up. But I think just go talk to gardeners.
Is the Master Gardeners, Alyssa... You're part of the Master Gardeners or the Bonner County Gardeners Association. Are they having any classes this year that people might want to take part in?
I think the classes just wrapped up last week. We had a bunch of spring classes for gardening. We had a great mushroom class. And the one last week was cooking with spring greens. So we have like a kind of an eclectic mix of classes. I think our next thing, I'm not sure if we're having a garden tour, but that probably would be the next event, if we do have it.
And where can one go to find out if there's going to be a gardening tour?
Yeah, the website is BC for Bonner County, bcgardeners.org.
Yeah. Okay, and you mentioned something that it's always nice to have as part of the garden talk agenda. Is food and cooking, and you mentioned cooking with spring greens.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone want to share where you're at with what you're eating from your garden right now? I know asparagus is probably
up. I was just going to say asparagus. Okay. This is the first year that our asparagus bed is like really producing, and it is heavenly.
Oh, it's great.
It's
every
so
day you go out,
every
you pick,
day.
You know,
pick
15 stalks of asparagus.
And I love it roasted. I mean, first
on
batch
the grill?
When we, I just do it in the oven
because
I'm too lazy to light the grill. But I guess that's less lazy sometimes, though. On the grill, that's a good idea.
Oh, I just marinated in soy sauce and ginger, fresh ginger, and let it soak for a while, and then just throw it on the grill, and it's delicious.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, get it all roasted up. I mean, it is like, I ate it so slowly and just savored every bite. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Fresh asparagus.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't really have anything I can eat yet that's out of my garden, but I'm getting spring greens from Six Rivers Market. They have some amazing spinach. So I've been doing a lot with spinach right now. Yeah.
To get spinach that you could sell right now, it's probably under row covers.
Yeah, it was last year's planting, overwintered, and then I'm sure it's got multiple covers.
Would you explain overwintering, please?
Go for it, Emily.
Sure, yeah. Well, there's a lot of different ways to overwinter, and only really a handful of crops that can handle it. So the things have to be pretty cold hardy, but you're not growing the crop to its maturity and then letting it sit there all winter. You're planting seeds, either letting them germinate and grow just a little bit, or sometimes you just plant seeds, like in December maybe, and then they come up as soon as they can in the spring. Or you are planting something in maybe September and it's growing a little bit but not to maturity, and then you're going to cover it. You're going to mulch it. You're going to cover it with row cover. It's nice if it's in a greenhouse or something, mm-hmm. so it's not covered in snow, but mm-hmm. you can do it outside. And then in the spring when it wakes up, you know, just like the grass wakes up so much earlier, you know, it has this jump start because it's already rooted
right.
in the ground. And so spinach is great to do it with. You can overwinter Swiss chard, certain varieties. You can overwinter onions, like green onions or even sweet onions and things. Kale, we overwintered kale in our greenhouse. It like looked like it died, you know. That one was fully grown. We planted it in July and then overwintered it in our greenhouse and then have been eating from it all spring since March.
Fantastic.
Was that just one plant?
No, it was kale plant? A couple hundred or something.
Oh.
that's my garden. And it's actually, we were trying to get it to save seed from it. I thought I would have seed maybe by now because I've never done it before, and it's flowered and it's been really beautiful, but I thought I would have seed right around now so I could pull it out and put basil in, but it's not quite done yet, and I don't think I have the patience to let it finish because my greenhouse space is prime. And so I'm going to have to maybe next time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot going on. Bugs haven't really become an issue yet. Well, I was thinking about a butterfly garden or plants we can plant for the bees, because our little friends, the bees, are so important for all the pollinating. And what can we do to help them? Because they're definitely struggling in this world.
Well, I think the most important thing to do is to not spray insecticides, mm-hmm. Pesticides, herbicides as much as possible. If you really absolutely must do it, then spot spray. Do it on a not windy day. You know, if you're going to do that stuff, please be responsible. Follow the instructions and use the appropriate amount because... you know, we don't know how everything, you know, might say only kills aphids, but, you know, but you wouldn't eat it probably. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that, especially insects, they have such fast metabolism and things can really affect them. So that would be the number one thing, but on a more positive, proactive approach. Yeah, there's a lot of plants you can plant that help, early, so for the bees to have early food, the actually letting your dandelions bloom mm-hmm. is really great. The bees love the pollen from the dandelions. There's bee balm and all sorts of herbs and mixes that you can grow that that bees will get lots of a mix of foods from. I think the bees are struggling a lot because they're being exposed to monocultures, you know, when they travel across this country. It's kind of a crazy business, the honeybee business, and they're just eating only almonds for, you know, a month, and then only almond flour, almond nectar, almond pollen, and so they're just not getting a well-balanced diet.
So those are the commercial bee keepers
yeah.
that move the big hives around to these orchards, especially in California or Florida, where they absolutely need the pollination.
Yeah, yeah.
And then how easy is it to have a little hive in your own backyard?
I wouldn't say it's easy. It's certainly doable. It's hard in this climate to... Bees, naturally, hives kind of come and go. And so having one hive and expecting it to do well is not necessarily possible. You have to be ready to have 3 or 4 or 5 in order to feel to have a sustainable apiary. At least I would say that's kind of minimum. But you know, another thing is like that when you plant these plants and things, like it's not just about honeybees. There's a lot of native bees, dozens of species of native bees, and those are doing a lot of our pollination too. And so we need to be supporting our native population as well as keeping, I mean, the honeybees are vital to the food system that we've created, you know, in this industrial agriculture, but, you know, supporting our native bees is also really important. And you can get mason bees and all sorts of other bees. It'd be fun to learn more about the native bees, actually. I don't know who knows that stuff. It would be really interesting to learn more about our native pollinators, because there's a lot more than honeybees to worry about and support.
I agree. That's the first time I've ever heard that term. So
yeah, there's lots.
And it's a very important part of our ecosystem here.
And it's fun, like, if you have a garden, to just go outside and sit there for a while and watch what's going on. All the blossoms on the trees right now. Stand there for a minute and look at all the insects that are coming and going. It is mm-hmm. not just honeybees. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of honeybees, but it is such a wide diversity of insects that are doing tasks that we don't even realize or appreciate, but we should, because we can't live without them.
So it doesn't matter how big or small your garden is, just to go out, what a place to go and just sit.
Or walk the alleys of Sandpoint are amazing. Mm-hmm. There's so many great...
And berries.
And berries and everything that's blooming right now. I mean, it's just, you don't have to have your own to walk around and appreciate everything that's going on.
So who wants to start an alley tour?
That would be really fun.
Or host
That
one.
Would be so fun.
Yeah.
I think I'll plant some sunflowers back there.
Yeah.
Gets
yeah.
the best sun Great. Of my yard.
Yeah. yeah
alley.
People are looking at your alleys, you guys.
Yeah.
Make them cool.
Yeah. Right.
I know. I ride my bike through them just mm-hmm. and look over people's fences to see how far along their garden is.
Yeah. And then there's like flowers just like bending out into the alley. Oh, bursting out of yards. And mm-hmm. That's fun.
Yep.
And it's okay to go down an alley. Just be respectful. And
yeah.
You'll hear dogs bark, and they're usually in the yards, and it's all cool.
Yeah. So,
I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio, and it is listener-supported public radio for North Idaho. And I want to really thank all three of you for coming in today. Any last words of wisdom? I love the idea of just going and sitting in the garden or walking through the alleys and mm-hmm. observing, because we're a part of the whole system that we are sort of creating. But remember to have some wildness in your garden too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're interested in gardening, as Emily and Alyssa have pointed out, it's not too late. In fact, it's a perfect time to start planting everything. And still, you've still got a few weeks before you can put tomatoes in it safely without having to worry about them. So you can plant carrots and beets and all lettuces and kale and all of that kind of stuff. So if you're interested, go to the community garden, have a look, and don't let the soil, the dry-looking soil, intimidate you. All good soil looks like that until it's watered and nurtured. So just give me a call, 265-9828, and we'll get you started.
I wanted to offer... we have a lot of tomato starts this year through my farm, Red Wheelbarrow Produce. And as Susie mentioned, this is a listener-supported radio station, and it's a pretty awesome thing that we have going. And as part of a gratitude is for the community that we've built in this town, we wanted to offer a discount on our tomato starts if you come to our booth at the farmer's market. We are on the west side of the market facing Wells Fargo. And if you just mention to me or my partner, Dave, that you're a KRFY listener or especially a member, then we will give you our tomato starts grown in organic potting soil, which are normally $3 for the sale price of $250. So come on down. We have lots of heirloom varieties and good stuff. So please come on by.
Well, thank you to Red Wheel Barrel Produce,
it's
Emily
a pleasure.
And Dave. That's a real nice thing. And to encourage our listeners and our supporters to become gardeners and also mention that they are to you guys, because you certainly are. Thanks. We've been doing this garden talk for a couple years maybe. So that's really nice. And Alyssa, do you have any parting words of wisdom, since we're also wise here?
Well, I just want to reiterate, it's not too late. I always delay planting my garden. I just got my potatoes in yesterday, and you can get them in any time now. Mm-hmm. my tomatoes won't go in until June, so, and peppers, eggplants, they won't go until then. And I always plant flowers, too. You know, I want it to look pretty, but that brings in the pollinators, so I'm always interplant flowers with my veggies.
Mm. And nastertiums you can eat. So, and they're wonderful in salads. So nastertiums are beautiful. They're prolific. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. really just, they're wonderful. They're colorful, but very tasty.
Yes.
And marigolds are also a great interplanting for bugs. Yeah. And you can eat certain varieties of them.
And we'll
There's
be
so many.
And we'll be back with Garden Talk. And the gardens will be in a whole different place in 1 month from now. I think I'm looking at after the membership drive that we'll be having at the Coldwater Creek storefront this year for KRFY. The doors will be open. There'll be music playing. And we want to invite people to come down to that on June 11th or 12th and 13th. To the Coldwater Creek store, because the doors will be open and we want to see our people. Oh. And just come on in and listen to music. And we'll be broadcasting live from 9 in the morning to 9 at night for 2 days. Yeah. A couple other announcements. Tomorrow morning, Chris Bessler and myself will be here in the studio to sit down with Zone 1 candidates. That's Kathy Rose. They've been both invited, Kathy Rose and Joel Molander. They're candidates for the upcoming Lake Ponderay School District Board elections, and that will be at 8 a.m. right here on 88.5 KRFY. And then on Thursday, May 14th, you can join Jack and Diane. Their guests will be representatives from the upcoming Lost in the 50s. In fact, it starts on Thursday. That's a citywide event, so we'll hear from Caroline, who will be telling us about some of the events coming up for that. And tonight, I would like to invite you to join me and my guest, Holly McGarry, on Between the Notes. I'll be interviewing Holly at 8 o'clock live here in the studio. She's bringing her whole band, Honeysuckle, in. But before the Between the Notes interview, they'll be playing live at the office. It's a venue at the Sandpoint Reader, and we are one of the sponsors of that event. So you can go to the Sandpoint Reader at 111 Cedar Street and pick up tickets today to hear Holly and Honeysuckle, her band from Boston. And if you don't catch that show, you can listen live to the Between the Notes at 8 o'clock here on KRFY. And you're right, Emily, you held up a poster. We have a really special event coming up. I'm actually going to play a song. Lindsay Lou and the Flatbellies and Patchy Sanders, two bands, one night.
I just want to say I saw Patchy Sanders when they came to town last time. They had a really small little concert at the Monarch Mountain, and it was amazing.
I know.
So go see that show. It's going to be really cool.
Well, I want to invite all of you to attend also.
You bet.
That is May 29th, and it is a benefit concert for KRFY Panhandle Community Radio. That's community radio for you. That's May 29th. You can get tickets now at Eichhardt's, Eve's Leaves, Panada.org, PatchySanders.com, the POAC office next to the Panada, and KRFY. You can call 265-2992 to get your tickets. It's time. And we're going to hear one of the songs. We're going to say, have a good day. It's going to take you to the top of the hour. This is Lindsay Lou and the Flatbellies. Everything's changed, and you can see them at the Panada on the 29th. Have a good day, girls.
You too.
Gals.
Thanks.
Thanks for having okay. us.
All at once, everything changed. I became what I never thought I could be. Is this me or am I?